The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
Well, listen, time, I don't know if it does heal, if the huge amount of text that we're getting in on both sides of the Saipan argument, I don't think people have moved on. But I'm joined now by horticulturist Paul Smith and garden designer Jim McGavin to talk about your new book. But first of all, Jeremy, you actually ran into Roy Keane this week. Has he got over it?
I don't know. I have to say, I know nothing about football, but that sort of occasion really, well, it still dominates, doesn't it? And it reminds you, I was saying to somebody in a pub that night in Cork that I'd met him, I just bumped into him as part of a thing we were doing down there in Cork by chance. And the guy in the pub was so angry that why would I be impressed by that? And it was amazing.
About Saipan or about meeting Roy Keane?
Say it was all tied up in the one thing. But he's an amazing, charismatic figure. He just is unbelievable, really.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. And it's just amazing just to see all of the responses that are coming in. We clearly have not got over it. But you got over, the pair of you, your initial inability to get this book out. A bit like Ard O'Hanlon there. I think the advance nearly had to be handed back on gardening together. A month-by-month guide to getting the most from your outdoor space. But you did manage to get it across the line. What is it, Paul? It's a Bible? Is it just sort of it's a month-by-month guide?
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, every month we look at what needs doing in the garden. You turn to May, you know, we're in May now. There's loads of things to do. So lots and lots in May. And then the other months, you know, the quieter months of the year, there's a bit less in there. But there's lots of information about what to do at any one time of the year and there's lots of good tips and advice as well.
Did you write it, Jeremy, just to get rid of everybody coming up and hassling you and asking you questions?
We wrote it in a way because we did this thing during lockdown over Instagram that every evening we'd go live, a community built up, and the same questions were coming up time and time again. For a long time, it was going to be a colouring book. But when eventually the words came out, they had given us all we knew what people in this country and in different places around the world wanted to learn about gardens. And also, we have a different take on gardens and we're slightly irreverent and we know we're in an age where possibly we should be a little bit more relaxed about gardens and forget the old rules. So for those reasons, month by month, but also a manifesto.
And you get like people, a bit like kind of politicians, something, people coming up and sort of like Paul sort of harassing you because of the day job, you know, that you do, or do people kind of feel happy to cross the threshold, like with their bags of leaves or their cuttings, just by the way to ask
like
a question.
A nurse, someone will show you their bad foot or whatever. You know, a gardener will get inundated with people coming up, and it's usually, you know, they bring a bag of festering leaves or something that's not worked, or they're showing you photos of things, and you're like, you know, normally you have to tell them the news they don't want to hear. But yeah, it's part of what we do, I guess. But
and what's weird about that is the stress is written all over their face. Gardening is a very stressful thing for an awful lot of people.
When it doesn't go right, people get really worried about it. And we would sort of take the approach of, well, you know what, sometimes it just happens and just roll with it. That's our take, which people don't.
But some people, there's a very funny story in the book, Paul, where people do take liberties because you went to a lunch, invited somebody's house, and they sort of coincidentally at the same time a sort of whole load of garden delivery kind of had arrived just very surreptitiously when you were there.
Yes.
Was that a sort of a little kind of thing just to get you to assist on the spot?
Yeah. It's like, oh, the gardener's here, so let's get him to check out a few plants. But I think that was about when we talk about planting a garden when you're actually going out. And the whole thing there was people go out to a garden centre, everything looks amazing, and they pick what looks great there and then. But actually, that's not the way to do it. You need to take a little bit of time to think about it. And in that case, they had brought all these plants, and I did my best. But like, if they had given me a week's notice, I could have.
So does that mean does that mean you're open to, you know, you get a lunch invite, and then somebody just gets their garden delivery just to come at the exact same time? It seems like a good thing to do. What's kind of really interesting about the pair of you is that it's sort of like an unlikely pairing in many events, and not many couples, business, romantic or otherwise, can say that their origin story was that they were planning a tattoo store that sold indoor plants. Jeremy, what were you thinking?
I had this idea, or a situation came about where I was to open a plants. Young people are very interested in house plants, and I got an opportunity to.
You just can't afford a house, but that's
one of the reasons why. Yeah, because the house plants are portable and they can have an attachment to them without having to look after them like pets, and it connects them with nature. So I, beside the Apple store in a big London shopping centre, I got a big store, and I was going to open a plant shop, which was also a really good coffee shop, but also a tattoo parlour, because young people are into all of these things. And the combination would have been a little bit different. And I heard about Paul, who is running a renowned nursery of rare plants in Wales. And I asked him, would he come to run this shop, which in the end never opened.
How did it, what was it, Paul? What was the reason why it didn't get to open, or did you just try at least?
Yeah, I suppose we got there. We got to the point of we were walking through the shopping centre with paintbrushes and everything. You know, we were at the cusp of opening, and then
didn't. The whole shop was ready to go. It was all furnished. Yeah. We were waiting for our deliveries. About 5 days to go, and it was a combination of things where we had to go a little bit rogue and lock in the builders to try and get it finished, and then COVID.
But then the pandemic hit, and you know, there was no windows in that shop, and it would have been closed for 2 or 3 months.
And we were going to do like plant themed tattoos. Was that was going to be like your special?
I suppose it would have been.
Yeah, you know,
a good little trademark. Lockdown. It was interesting just speaking to Ardal O'Handler earlier. He was saying that the great uncertainty gave him the space to go and to work on his new novel. But the pandemic was good for your line of business. In terms of your Instagram stories, the gardening stories with them, some questionable music choices, it has to be said, the Dirt podcast. But there's no doubt that our interest in nature, the outside world and gardening took on such much more profound meaning during the pandemic.
During the pandemic, it did, because we were all locked at home. And if we were lucky enough, and that's very important, because not everybody has access to gardens or even outside spaces. If we were lucky enough to have a front, back garden, roof terrace, or even a windowsill, people really took to it. But it also coincided with people re-examining social consciences, because we had Black Lives Matter, and we had that movement making people question everything about the way they live their lives. So that really fed into both of these things, fed into what we started to do, which was to talk to people directly through social media, ask questions and learn, really learn.
And then the actual process of writing the book, Paul, you had to take different, I guess, sections, because your worlds are very different. You know, Jim, you're often kind of big design, whatever. And then, Paul, you're into nearly the reading part of it. So you look nearly into like biology class, into the nucleus of things, just right down into the. You're a bit of a nerd.
Absolutely. When it comes to growing, you know, the whole magic of taking a cutting and how like a little dried up seed can turn into a plant, like that really excites me. Whereas Dermot is all about, well, I mean, you're also excited by that, but garden design and inspiration and all that, that's more Dermot's side of things. So we're two totally different characters. We come at it from, you know, total different ends of the spectrum, but we do have this common love for gardening, and that is, I guess, how we were able to come the book together.
You were both involved. I did see it recently, the fabulous the Antrim Castle Gardens for the Queen's Jubilee. You were both involved. It rotates, is it?
It does everything. So every 50 minutes, it's a lovely looking garden, which originally we created at Chelsea Flower Show. And every 15 minutes, it goes all Hollywood to the tune of Pure Imagination with Gene Wilder singing. Things happen in the undergrowth. So it'll be officially opened on June the 4th.
Yeah,
we have very posh looking invites, don't we?
You do. And actually, on the images, they're fantastic images of the book, including one, Paul. I have to just point out this utterly ridiculous picture of you with some sort of a wildflower thing.
A floral hat. Well, that was in the height of the lockdown, and we had this competition. It wasn't a competition, it was a fundraiser.
I was wondering, was it the height of a breakdown there?
No, it was nothing else to do, you see. So I was stuck at home, so I made this floral hat of a straw hat.
And but it was a competition, because everybody on Instagram sent in the hats that they made, and I think Paul should have won, really.
Yes, I think it is certainly a unique thing. If anyone has a look at it, but actually, all of the images, it's very personal, because all of the images in the book were taken by you on your phones.
Yeah, we're so grateful to Gilda Publishers for this. It's a very personal book. It is our stories. It is coming together during lockdown. It is also the riffraff, who are the audience that developed for our Instagram broadcast, inspired by them, but been able to chart Paul's garden in Carlow and his garden in Wales and my garden in County Wicklow and show them at different seasons and different times and very different gardens in ways too. But just camera phone pictures and...
The images are fantastic. It's a beautifully designed book. You were talking kind of how you're very, very different, but this sort of difference sort of converges. But you both have this healthy disregard for... I suppose the things that we would have aspired to in the past in terms of our gardens, you know, wicked fences, you know, neat gardens.
Yes.
And yet, Paul, I think you describe yours as a benign neglect. What's happening now? Like, is this the great excuse that actually you don't have to work at it? You can just chuck it and let it all go?
Yeah, just put a few plants in and watch it. That's what I've done. I mean, we were walking around Dermot's garden earlier on this morning and there's a bit of that there. You know, there's a couple of weeds here and there, but we're not too worried about them. We don't let the weeds really go to seed. So they don't become a huge problem. Driving in here, the N11, the road looks amazing. It's full of alliums at the moment and they're putting in camassias. They have bulbs there probably start in February with all sorts of things. So that's, people are beginning to realise that that's the
one of the pictures in the book is out by IKEA in Ballymun from last summer when you stopped your car to take a picture of a wildflower meadow. Now, I'm not saying native wildflower meadows because people can be pedantic about this, but a wildflower meadow, which is open flowers for pollinators, in the central reservation. It was unbelievable. Actually, you broadcast live. We were doing a show and you walked up and down.
So Dermot has this sort of weird a non-mainstream gardening style, you know, this rewilding, this kind of letting things kind of go. Is that now becoming more mainstream or are the two of you just still weird?
Absolutely. I think...
That too, maybe.
It's really important that we open our eyes to nature and to the environment and to the insects. And it was World Bee Day yesterday. We have to look after the pollinators. If we don't look after them, there will be nothing else. We won't be able to live. We won't have the food that we need. And our environment is in a crisis. So we've pictured this idea of success about controlling as being something that controls nature, that uses weed killers, that takes moss and daisies and dandelions out of lawns. They're the only productive plants in a lawn.
And on that topic of lawns, because people are very precious about their lawns and I suppose we have this image that they have to be very, very neat and very, very well maintained.
Yes.
And our own back garden at home in yours, this long, long, big sprawling thing. And actually, maybe we were ahead of the curve. I don't think we would call it rewilding. Maybe it was just a lack of maintenance at times. But people can be obsessed about it, you know, the size of a lawn and also just how neat it is. Again, Paul, is that kind of changing? Are we in an era of abandon for that?
Yeah, like, you know, a lawn, when it's done properly and done right, it is a beautiful thing. But we're not saying no to that. You know, lawns have their place. They have a very important function if you've got kids, whatever. But maybe if you have a huge garden with loads of lawn, there's no need to have all of it in lawn and you only need a small part of it. So I think people are beginning to come around to that. As you go around the city and go around places like Dermot was talking about, IKEA or up the main road here, everyone's changing and they are starting to do these areas that are left for wildlife.
And Dermot, tell me about it. The No Mow May. What is that in terms of... trying to encourage people not to maybe go for that neat kind
it's
of...
It's a thing in the UK which is spreading to this country. Lawns are a desert in terms of ecology because all those individual grass plants want to flower. In the ground, there are probably native Irish orchid seeds waiting to grow, but we chop the heads off every week, twice a week at this time of the year because we want everything to look neat and tidy. Gardening is
the Dads of Ireland are celebrating now, just sitting back, just going, great.
Well, not only the lawns, the hedges too.
No mo never.
You see, we have the luxury of controlling nature, but gardening is really quite political. It's a very middle class upper middle class thing. Not everybody who lives on this island gets to garden. Most gardeners, if you see them portrayed on television or in magazines, they look like Paul and
it's
me.
It's an access and equality issue.
It's a huge access and equality. And not only, it's a historical issue too, because we've had plant hunters leave this country, go to other countries, bring back plants that were either for agriculture or for ornamental use, often stealing them and been lauded for it, gone to our big institutions, been propagated, and it been seen as a virtuous and really good thing. I think we have to look at all that. We also have to look at the heroes of gardening, because people who around the country have beautiful gardens, they open to them to the public. But it's quite it's inspirational, but it's also maybe a little bit selfish, and maybe the heroes are the people in communities who get out and encourage community gardening. I think that's where gardening
and that's been
to go.
A lovely phenomenon to see. I have loads of questions coming in. I'm finally getting through the blizzard of McCarthy, Keane, Saipan emails and text messages to get one. A listener from the Liberties, my former parish, she called in to say, what do people small yards do? She's she said, she's too old to be dragging heavy pots around, you know, so what can you do with that?
You will need some growing medium. If she can grow, if it's a yard, it kind of indicates that it's a hard surface. But if she can get somebody in to dig a hole, plant something in the ground, there are loads of things, especially in Dublin City. We have the most incredible climate, really anywhere on this planet, to grow plants. And she can grow plants that have originated really anywhere, put in a hawthorn tree and see that in flower at this time of the year. A birch is absolutely beautiful, or she could go with something a little bit more exotic, like a palm tree. But in a courtyard, in a protected courtyard, the most exotic plants will grow, like cannas and dazzling begonias, and if it has sun, she can grow tomatoes.
And Paul, another question, vertical gardening, is that becoming a bigger thing, and what do you do if your yard is north facing?
It really is. You know, we're running out of space in the city. We're building all over the place. And the only place left to garden is often on a wall. So you often see these kind of setups or kind of modular green walls where they put actual plants. They're kind of funny. They use a lot of water. They can be a little bit iffy. But the best thing to do is to put a climbing plant. So a north facing wall, climbing hydrangea, is absolutely
ideal.
You
saw the one in my place this morning.
Yeah, it's
just
in flower.
Hydrangea petiolar is perfect for a north facing wall.
Yeah. Sinead and Galway says, please ask Gerard and Paul for advice on what to replace extensive 4 foot high Buxus hedging with. The Buxus unfortunately has blight.
The dreaded blight.
Sinead, we're coming to Kenny's in Galway on Friday for a live podcast tape.
We're bringing a load of hedging, aren't we?
And we're bringing hedging. We'll
don't
tell
bring
you
the blight with you. Do not bring the blight with you.
Replace hedging with something native, I would say. A native mixed hedge. You can get Ilex crenata, which will mimic the growth habit and the evergreen structure of the Buxus, but
nothing does it as good as box. And maybe it's time for a rethink about what you grow there.
There's a bit sort of in the book, it's sort of like a bit like a crime fiction novel with people going about what time of the day do you grind with your secateurs and your clippers to cut your clippings and I don't know, do people steal these clippings? But when to pick your flowers and how to get the most out of them. I just see these images of people just going around like stealing clippings and putting them in their bag. But
the most important, well, there is something important about that. If you go on holidays, please don't bring anything from any other country, any cuttings, any clippings, any geranium, any bougainvillea that you saw somewhere else, any bit of olive tree, anything in a pot, anything with soil. Don't bring that into the country. That's really, really important. Secondly,
don't steal your neighbour's flowers.
Well, mind that.
You know, the old question, when's the best time to take a cutting? It's when no one's looking.
I was thinking you were going to say the morning. I don't know if it was in the morning or the evening there, Paul, but yeah.
The big
thing encourage any horticultural crime out there.
The plant hasn't read the book, so make up your own rules and you learn as you go along.
Walking around woodlands and we can see rhododendron everywhere. Is that going to take over everywhere, Gerard?
Depending on the rhododendron. I was in Kerry, Ballinskelligs in Kerry last weekend, and rhododendron ponticum was in flower. Invasive species came during Victorian's time, smothers all other kind of ecology, plant or wildlife out of the place. Most rhododendrons won't, but ponticum, we should be taking it out.
The book is a month by month guide. I keep forgetting to go back to what we're here for. It's actually about the book, which is a month by month guide. We won't start with January because that is a bit of a bold word in it. So I fast forward to May instead, and it starts with a less impolite word, Paul. It says, May is an explosion.
It is. You go out into the garden in May and everything just comes to life. You know, it's sort of the whole couple of months before that have been a build up. I was in the garden, Dermot's garden this morning, my garden last night, and it is just alive. It's just full of colour and growth and weeds
bees.
And bees and all those things. You know, like, we don't mind having all those things in the garden, and happy to have the garden.
And it really
full.
Matters, doesn't it, even from a broader biodiversity point of view, to see bees, to see insects. The fact that we're not seeing as many insects on the front of our cars is actually a problem.
Yeah.
It's not a...
And even the ones you can't see, because the moths will come around at night and take the pollen and, you know, cross-pollinate the plants.
The things people don't like wasps, they're actually quite important, you know, to have in a garden. If they're in a place where they're out of the way, just, you know, don't go there for the summer and let them be, because they're important too.
And is this a good time for like a planting frenzy the summer?
It's all right. You know, any during the summer, you might have to rely on a lot of water. So spring, autumn is ready. Autumn, winter is good. We do a lot of division in terms of herbaceous borders and stuff like that in spring. So you can plant anytime, because we now have plants in garden centres and nurseries come in containers. That used not be the way. But, you know, we've had a drought. We've had a drought on the East Coast for an awful lot of this year. So, you know, just be careful. And if you can plant, it's also cheaper to plant. If you're planting trees, you can get bare-rooted stock trees and shrubs in midwinter. So I would...
And Paul, whatever, May, June is kind of when it all goes insane.
Yeah, yeah. June is when everything just kind of gets a bit too much, and you know, you don't have time to do all that weeding, you don't have time to go out and plant, and it just... But also, the thing about gardening is enjoy it, you know, and that's what the whole book is about too. There's lots of lovely photos in there. Our point is, yes, it is not too difficult to garden, you know, myself and Dermot can do it, it's not too hard, but just go out and enjoy your garden, sit down, enjoy the space, and just, if you have the ability and you're lucky enough to have a garden, you know, sit out and enjoy it.
Do some people, as well as maybe asking questions, just want perhaps like me, the low maintenance version? Or just kind of because it can be quite a tricky art.
Well, Paul sometimes calls certain aspects of gardening dark arts. So there are, you know, taking cuttings and cross pollination and all that sort of thing. But most of it is easy. Most of it is incredibly rewarding. Just a wonderful thing to do, and it's that thing that keeps on giving, because we have these seasons and different things happen to the plants. You know, in Japan they have 72 seasons.
What?
Did you know that? Yeah.
72.
How?
So they chart, well, they look at nature and they say, today the bugs and the insects started burrowing for the winter, or today the bamboo shoots are, and they divide it into 8-day cycles, and they tell you when the lotus flower is coming up. So this is a short season or whatever. Mm. And it's a much slower way to appreciate
and
it.
And obviously there's been a huge interest, largely through the lens of, you know, sustainability. There's lots of practical tips in here, whether it is seeds or reusing water, things like that. And it strikes me as well, you know, of interviewing, you know, young authors like Dara McNulty, and this whole, you know, that there is a really renewed interest in nature.
It's huge. It's huge. And well, for me, Paul embodies an awful lot of that, because when I was, you know, doing big brash programs using shiny objects to create dramatic makeovers, people were worried that everybody would want to be at the Chelsea Flower Show, everybody would want to be on TV being a garden designer. You have a great education system. There's a wonderful girl down in Waterford IT called Dr. Cara Daly, and she's inspired a generation of youngsters like Paul, like Rory Newell, who has a great nursery in Galway, like our friend Dara, who works in a private garden in Rathfarnham. The craft of gardening is really inspiring, it's really important, and we're producing some of the best anywhere on this island.
And Paul, I suppose that's what the book really sort of speaks into. It really leans into that and the sustainability, but also making it very accessible. As you say, accessible for those who, many people don't have their own garden, but it is something I think you both feel very, very passionate about making gardening more accessible to all.
Yeah, to make it as accessible as you can to people. You know, not everyone has a garden. Some people might be able to do it on a windowsill. We talk a bit about container gardening, that you can, you know, you don't have to have a garden to garden necessarily. It obviously helps, but there's lots of other ways you can garden. A small little windowsill, you can go out and, you know, help in the community. You can guerrilla garden, which is this phenomenal that happens where people go around and, you know, take over a corner of an area in the community that hasn't been loved and garden that. So there's loads and loads of ways.
Or as we drove out of my house, I don't know, did you see it, the boys down in Kilmechanic Village doing all the gardening and me trying to hide, because I always say I'll turn up and I never do because I'm somewhere else.
It's interesting that neither of you will be at the big show of the year, the Chelsea Flower Show. Will you miss that, Dermot? I know there was a little bit of a a frisson a few years ago. Will you miss being over there?
No, I won't miss it. I've been invited, but you only need to go to Chelsea as a visitor once or twice. Mm. It's the same all year. It's magnificent, but if you look behind the scenes, it's not really everything we would kind of agree with. So it's
fun. And anyway,
you've
been shameless, Paul, because you're plugging your own little garden festival. When is that coming up? Utterly shameless, the pair of you.
That is happening in September, so the 15th to the 17th of September, down in the most incredible spot in Ballinskellig in County Kerry. It's just extraordinary, isn't it?
Last year we had 200 people. Some came from America, some came from Africa, from Europe, from the UK, but mostly from Ireland. And we will be taking over the place to have a big, we're hoping this develops into an annual garden conversation where these type of subjects are explored every year. We're basing it a bit on the How and Why Book Festival. So it's a place, Ballinskellig is beautiful, it's a place apart, it's a wonderful place to grow. There are people with beautiful gardens down there, nurseries will come down and enjoy us. We're doing Fermoil pottery, are coming to show us how to throw pots. We have Steve Simpson, who's an amazing illustrator, coming down to show us how to draw. And it's all on our Instagram. We put the poster up on my Instagram.
Which has proved to be a brilliant fora for you. I'm sure maybe perhaps Gil, your publisher at Times, would have been very relieved that you actually got it together. Instead of gardening together, I think it should have been called having the crack together. But Dermot Gavin and Paul Smith, your new book is out now, Gardening Together. Thanks a million for coming in and having the conversation.
To answer everybody's questions.
We heard it
today.
And we'll put it up afterwards on the show. Get out of the studio, the pair of you. It was great to talk to you. We'll take a quick break.
Email brendan@rte.ie.